Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. How are you, Mike?
Good. You're still up in Michigan enjoying the outdoors?
Yep, lovely Onekama, and enjoying it very much.
Good. You know, when the Midwest got all hot a couple of weeks ago, what happens in Michigan when that happens? Are you guys hot up there, too?
We're in a little microclimate. Our place is in a wooded area, but it's right on the lake, so we get the breeze off the lake, and we're shaded. So it's probably 10 or 15 degrees cooler here than it is even 4 miles inland in town. So we just saw the Chicago to Mackinac boats coming back still today and yesterday from the race, and they had their first, sadly, fatality. I don't know if that made the news outside of the Midwest, but yeah. They had a boat that sank and two people drowned.
Wow.
Up near Beaver Island about a week ago now. They had a big storm. They had 70-mile-an-hour gusts.
Wow.
On this, and a 35-footer just flipped stem over stern, I guess you would say, or stern over stem or something like
that. Yeah.
And, just like that. And apparently they were whacked in the head and drowned immediately. So,
very
sad.
Goodness.
First time in about 80 years of that race that they lost any sailors.
Weird weather. We will spare a conversation on weather patterns and global warming, but it is hard to figure all this stuff out. This week we're going to talk about something I don't remember talking about before as a poem, and it brings up this issue of autism. And I work at a university where we have a large autism center, and despite that, it is something that still puzzles me. What we do know about autism is that it's a developmental disorder commonly appearing in the first 3 years of life. It is thought to affect the brain's normal development with an impact on both social and communication skills. Unfortunately, to my knowledge at least, we don't know how common the disorder is, and we also don't know whether it's increasing in frequency. What we do know is that there's a lot of attention being focused on it, and this may be due to some newer definitions of autism and also the broader definition of not only autism but spectrum disorders. But we sure do hear about it a lot. So a child, for example, who's diagnosed with high-functioning autism today may have been thought in the past to be sort of odd or strange 20 or 30 years ago. Perhaps that explains me. I'm not quite sure. We certainly are hearing lots about this. The causes of autism, we do know it's a physical condition. It seems to be linked to abnormal biology and chemistry in the brain. But, you know, there are lots of candidates, but I've not read of any particular neurotransmitter or area of the brain that is regularly affected. Genetic factors seem to be important. For example, identical twins, much more likely than fraternal twins or sibs to have autism. If one has it, in other words, the other one will get it. Chromosomal abnormalities and other nervous system neurological problems are often much more common in families that have autism. Autism, much more common in men or boys, 3 or 4 times more often than it is in girls. Family income, education, lifestyle, these things have been studied up the gazumba, and it doesn't seem to affect the risk of autism. Also, it's worth mentioning, although most listeners are going to know this, there have been several studies and connections and reports about the link between autism and the MMR vaccine. And, you know, there are lots of reasons why those reports came to those conclusions, but most of them are great examples of bias, but it has been very well studied. And of all the things I've mentioned, the only thing that I feel most convinced about is that the MMR vaccine is not, I repeat, not linked to autism. There's some studies looking at diet, digestive tract changes, mercury toxicity, minerals and vitamins and the processing or metabolism of them. All of these have been suggested, but none of them have been shown to be effective. We could go on and on about autism. It's a very interesting disorder. By way of treatment, I just want to mention that there is no one treatment. Most programs will build on the interest of the child in a highly structured schedule of educational activities, lots of use of visual aids, a variety of therapies. Some of these you will have heard of. Some of them, I mean, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech-language therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy. I've not heard of applied behavioral analysis, ABA, diet, supports groups, and medications. So it's medications that brings us to our POMS. It is important to know that currently only risperidone is approved for treatment. We'll talk more about that. But it's the treatment of the aggression and the irritability that can accompany autism. To my knowledge, there are no medicines that are approved to treat the underlying disorder of autism. The article that you're going to teach us about, it was published in the journal Pediatrics. It asks the clinical question, what medicines are effective for what issues in children with autism spectrum disorders? So a fairly long introduction there, Mark, but what did the authors find?
Yeah, this was a systematic review, and they did a very good job of looking at all of the standard databases. They found any research published since 2000 that investigated drug treatment of children with an autistic disorder. And two authors looked at all the studies, pulled out the data, assessed the quality of the studies. They overall found relatively little information on drug therapy. And four of the randomized trials, in fact, the best study drug was, as you mentioned, Risperdal or Risperidone. And there were four RCTs, and they did show a benefit greater than placebo in decreasing what's called challenging behaviors, and in particular, hyperactivity. It did not appear to have an effect on repetitive behaviors and other symptoms like that. There were two short studies of aripiprazole, which is why they call it Abilify, which is much easier to say, which is that they found some benefit on challenging and repetitive behaviors better than placebo with that drug. Both of those drugs, though, did cause weight gain, somnolence, and extrapyramidal symptoms. There were studies of the SSRI citalopram and escitalopram, so Celexa, and they found no benefit. There was a study of Ritalin or methylphenidate and did show some benefit in terms of the hyperactivity associated with autism, but they also saw more irritability and lethargy and social withdrawal in those kids when they were treated with the Ritalin. So bottom line is that there is some evidence to support Risperdal and Abilify for treating some of these challenging behaviors and for the Abilify repetitive behaviors, but they also cause some pretty significant side effects. Neither drug is a panacea. Certainly neither is a replacement for some of those intensive behavioral therapies that have been shown to increase IQ. They have been shown to increase function. They don't typically get kids out of what you would consider the autistic range of behaviors, but they certainly do increase function in many kids and in some of the clinical trials out there.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, Mark. I know this article didn't address this.
Because I'm such a world expert on autism, right?
No, but I mean, just sort of as a backseat observer to this, what's your take? I mean, this is something that when I did pediatrics, my pediatric rotations, I mean, it wasn't even on the radar screen, and now it's everywhere.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, there are kids being diagnosed with it and labeled with it who really have fairly modest symptomatology. And as you said, a kid who might have been considered a little bit odd or a little bit, you know, bookish or a little bit different is now, you know, labeled with autism spectrum disorder. And, you know, I don't know whether that's I'm not labeling that as a good or a bad thing. I mean, I think sometimes in some cases that helps those kids. And I've seen that help parents to understand those behaviors. And kids that have some mild repetitive, you know, sort of tick, almost tick-like behaviors. And I'm sitting here sort of tapping my fingers on the table. They'll sit there
exactly.
And have to be fidgeting, have to be doing something. And, you know, it gets labeled this way, but it in a way it does help educate the parents about strategies for dealing with it. And so maybe that's a good thing. I mean, I always worry a little bit when we get this sort of over-diagnosis going. But, you know, certainly the criteria for autism have greatly broadened into autism spectrum disorder. You know, it's not just the kid, the Rain Man kind of personality, and so it's much broader now.
Excellent. a very interesting phenomena. We'll watch it carefully and bring you other poems as they come available. We'll talk with you again next week, Mark. Thanks so much.
All right, talk to you then.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.